Welcome back to this tape-delayed version of Shattering Mist. They're still working to correct the problems with the servers at the Genesis Communication Networks. I'm sure they'll get them resolved over the duration of today, but now we have the archive. The archive is important today because tonight at sundown, we begin the celebration of Shavuot. Shavuot is seven Sabbaths. It is Yahweh's time to enrich and empower us. That is its purpose. Christians pervert this day to symbolize the birth of their church. As a matter of fact, one of the callers even today on the KGAP program spoke of Pentecost and wanted to know why I celebrate Shavuot as opposed to Pentecost when Pentecost speaks of the birth of their church. But you know, when you look at the testimony that Shimon Kefesh provided to Luke in the opening chapter of the books of the book of Acts, what you find is that there was nothing born on that day. It's not about birth. Our birthday is Bukurim. What happened on Shavuot is two things. Those who had availed themselves of Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim, who became immortal, who became perfected, who became adopted into God's covenant family, were enriched so that they understood God's message. And they were empowered so that they could share his message. The empowerment in this particular case happened to be something that was essential. The ability to convey God's message in whatever language people understood. So they could translate the message that God revealed in the Hebrew scriptures into the languages people spoke. That was what happened on this day. And to understand all of that is essential. It is when we fail to have an appreciation for what God did for us, what these days represent, then it's all for naught. You can show up tonight and fix yourself a nice dinner and claim that you're observing Pentecost. Or you can call it the Feast of Weeks and completely disassociate this day with God and call it Shabbat, as if there was a V in the Hebrew language. In fact, I received a letter. This person's name is Wayne. He wrote me a letter and says, I can't understand how you claim Shabbat is to be observed over the Feast of Weeks and Pentecost. Now, wait a minute. I don't speak of Shabbat unless it's I'm saying that Shabbat is the rabbinical name for this day. God's name for this day is Shavuot. Shavuot is sevens. But because it is sevens, the word for seven in Hebrew is also the word for sworn oath or promise. It is also the word for Shabbat. The Sabbath, the word for promise, the word for seven, are the same word. And Shavuot is just sevens. And so to correctly communicate all of those aspects of Shavuot, which is Yahweh's title for this day, not Pentecost. Sorry, Wayne. Pentecost is a transliteration of the Greek term for 50. God didn't communicate in Greek. You can't apply a Greek transliteration to a Hebrew concept. When you do that, when you apply Pentecost and call this day Pentecost as opposed to Shavuot, when it's associated with Pentecost, which is always celebrated on a Sunday because it's tied to the Christian pagan celebration of Easter, when you do that, you lose the meaning. The meaning is essential here. Shavuot is based on seven, based on promise, based on Shabbat. Put those concepts together and you begin to develop an understanding. You are enriched with the teaching that Shabbat provides. You're empowered with the truth, which is an extremely useful thing. Now, this wing, who is attacking me, says Shabbat comes from the religion of Judaism by counting 50 days from Bukurim. No, it doesn't. Now, Shabbat is simply a corruption of Shavuah. And the way that it is corrupted is to replace the W sound in Hebrew, which is a vowel making the O sound, and replacing it with the V. That's how it becomes Shabbat as opposed to Shavuah. And if you, the realization is that this day is based upon counting 50. That's why God associates it with 50. It is, you can do one of two things to come up with the timing of this day. Your choice. God associates the timing of this day with the day after the Shabbat. What is the Shabbat? Again, he's using this seven concept, this promise concept, this Sabbath concept. Yahweh associates unleavened bread with a Shabbat, because unleavened bread is his ultimate promise to us. It's his promise to perfect us. It occurred when he fulfilled it on the Sabbath, the Shabbat of year 4000 Yah, when he fulfilled it as the second of four Mikrei that he fulfilled in year 4000 Yah, 33 CE in our pagan calendars. And so God says, you can count to know the timing of this because these things are related as seven sevens plus one day after the Shabbat of matzah, of unyeasted bread. Because that's when you will have been perfect. Or you can just count seven sevens from the day after this Sabbath, which is, of course, from Bukurim. So I never get caught up in timing. It's not my interest. I do try to convey the timing as accurately as I know it. That's why I'm going to celebrate Shavuot this evening. But the realization is that Shavuot is based on the promise of sevens, and it's seven sevens, just so that we understand the importance of seven. The promise of seven, of the promise of the Sabbath itself from Bukurim, or seven sevens plus one, which is 50, from unyeasted bread. And this seven sevens plus one, which equals 50, is an essential aspect of understanding God's overall testimony to us, because there is a model for seven sevens plus one, or 50, in God's overall testimony. And if you don't make that connection, you'll never understand his timeline. That's the Yovel. Yah's Lamb is God. The Yovel. The Yovel is based on exactly the same formula. Seven sevens plus one is 50. Multiples of 40 Yovel, 40 being the time of testing. It's repeated over and over and over again in Scripture. 40 Yovel from the time that Adam and Chawah were expelled from the Garden of Eden to the time that the covenant on Mount Moriah was ratified between Yahweh and Abraham. Exactly 40 Yovel. Exactly 40 Yovel from the time that Abraham and Yahweh affirmed the covenant on Mount Moriah. Yahusha enabled, he honored the promises of the covenant on exactly that same mountain. Exactly 40 Yovel later. And that's why it's important to know that Shavuot is based on the formula of seven sevens plus one from the Sabbath of unyeasted bread. It's tied to unyeasted bread. But it's exactly seven sevens from Bukurim, which is the day that we are born spiritually into Yah's family. Pentecost is about the birth of the Christian church. There is no church in Scripture. There is no birth associated with Shavuot. Birth is associated with Bukurim. So seven sevens later. The promise of seven later. are enriched and empowered by God, because the idea of God having a spiritual family, a covenant family, and then doing nothing would be totally counterproductive. The message of Shavuah is that we're enriched and empowered by God. Who's we? The children of the covenant family. And he says that this idea of counting 50 days from Bukodim happens to be rabbinic. That's not true, by the way. They count 50 days from matzah, not the scriptures. Well, it is the scriptures that they base the rabbis base their formula. Now, are they capable of corrupting the purpose? Absolutely. Have they corrupted the purpose? Yes. Do they have the day wrong? No, they don't have the day wrong. And why even argue over the one day versus the next? Why would you write a hostile letter on this as opposed to discussing the importance of the meaning of this day and what it represents? But not Wayne. No. No, he's accusing me of being rabbinical, of being unscriptural in what I'm telling you. Now, I'm absolutely capable of being wrong, folks. One of the reasons that I'm never definite on whether Shavuah should be celebrated beginning last night and therefore this moment, starting this evening and therefore also tomorrow, or even the following day, is I don't think God gave us the ability to know for certain every aspect of his timing relative to these days. Like, when is the first day of the month? In terms of how are you to calculate or observe the beginning of a month? And as a result, because we were not given the tools to be absolutely certain as to if it's today or tomorrow, I have a tendency to say, you know, I just don't know for sure. I can tell you what I'm going to do, and I can tell you what the day means because we can be certain what the day means. No, Wayne here decided he was going to say that I was being rabbinic, which is not true, and unscriptural, which is also not true. Because I've chosen one day versus another, 50 days from Bukodim, which is also not true. Doesn't have a single fact right. And so he said he asked this question during a call to the radio show after the week of unleavened bread, but I never answered the question. I do my best to answer every caller's question. Is there a possibility that old Wayne here asked more questions than the time we had permitted allowed? Certainly possible. But I can tell you that the accusation that he has leveled is untrue. Now, why am I defensive? That's not compatible with modern sensibilities. You know, details are important. And it's important to the best of our ability to get the details right. In this particular case, I have shared the details with you correctly, that Shavuah is 49 plus 1 days, 7 Sabbaths plus 1 day, from the celebration of Matzah, which is 50 days from Matzah. Or it is 7 sevens from the day after Matzah, which is Bukodim. And the name of the feast is Shavuah. It's not Shabbat. There's no V sound in Hebrew. But the name of the day is not Pentecost. The Christian conception of what happened on Pentecost, first of all, their Pentecost only occurs on a Sunday. It's tied to the pagan's festival of Easter. And yet Wayne wants to connect these things. Pentecost and weeks are man's names for these events. It's not God's. Shavuah is his name. And when you understand his name, you understand his teaching regarding these days. It's the Torah that sets the timing for them, not Judaism. So I said to Wayne, Shavuah is Yahweh's name for the feast. Pentecost and weeks are man's names. The Torah sets the timing, not Judaism. So I don't understand your concern. So what did Wayne do? He just said nothing and provided a link to fossilizedcustoms.com. Fossilized Customs is a site that is maintained by a fellow named Lou White. I don't typically besmirch people's reputations on this program unless they're doing things that are promoting lies. There are lots of reasons not to be comfortable with Lou White. But more than anything, my issue is, if you're going to write someone saying you're wrong, you're ungodly, you're being pagan, you're being rabbinical, you're lying, and corrupt their message, and they answer you directly, and then all you're going to do is post a link to somebody's website, what's wrong with you? You picked an argument, you were wrong in your premise, and then you think that the retort is to post a link to somebody else's website. I don't care what website it is. I don't even care if it's my own. Man up. Either say thank you for correcting what I had thought was you were saying, and now I know you're not. Or correcting my misunderstanding, or even saying, you know, I still think you're wrong, and here's why I think you're wrong. No, just provide a link. Now, the purpose of this day of Shavuah is to enrich us with God's teaching. Is it to post a link to Lou White's website? You know what you'll find on Lou White's website? A head shop. A store that sells drug paraphernalia and is just filled with all sorts of pagan kinds of idols. Everything from astrology to the artifacts from the pagan gods of Greece and Rome and the like. I happen to own one of Lou Wright's books. I read it, and there's some aspects of it. It's called Fossilized Customs. And the first, about a quarter of it, has some pretty good insights. It's not particularly well-researched. It's not consistently accurate. It's extraordinarily jumbled. And the last three-quarters of it is hit and miss. Some things true, some things not. Lou presents himself as an expert on things that he doesn't really fully grasp. But the fact is that Lou has made a contribution to the realization that Jesus Christ isn't the right name, that Christianity isn't a valid religion, that the Torah still is important. And so, to the degree that he has revealed things that have value and that he also has some links from his site that demonstrate that the Roman Catholic Church did some pretty miserable things relative to their promotion of their new religion over Yahweh. Those are good. I'm glad he's done them. But if you want to prevail in accusing me of being wrong, that's pretty easy to do because I make mistakes all the time. But at least pose your own argument. If I take the time to address your letter, that's the least you can do and respond, is address those issues yourself, particularly on a day like Shavuah, where God is attempting to enrich his children with his Torah and empower his children with his Spirit so that we can grow. So that we're in a position where we can share his truth with others. So that more people can know that these days are God's invitations for us to meet with him. And that these days make the covenant's promises possible. We'll return in a moment. To Shattering Myths. This is the statement that Yahweh made regarding Shavuah, the promise of seven Sabbaths, the day that is celebrated, seven Sabbaths plus one day from the special Shabbat of unyeasted bread, or exactly seven Sabbaths from Bukurim, which is the day that celebrates our birth into God's covenant family. He says, you shall bring, or you shall come bringing. So God wants us to arrive. It's an invitation that he has given. It's like each of the seven Moed Mikre. They're all invitations. And so on this one, he says, when you answer this invitation, he says, I want you to bring out of your homes, your dwelling places, two loaves of bread. Now, the two loaves of bread are yeasted. They're symbolic of the fact that everyone invited to this party is corrupted with sin. We're inviting not only Goyim and Yehudim, but also those who have been made righteous by God's provision and those who are still associated with their sins. And also a loaf representing the yeast or the political and religious sin that was associated with Yahusha, so that his soul paid the price to ransom and redeem us by going to Sheol to pay the punishment, the penalty for our sin. So two loaves of bread. They're an ascending wave offering. By an ascending wave offering, it means that these two loaves of bread are symbolic of an offering that God is making to us. And the waving means we get to go from our troubled world to his perfect home. And they are ascending in the sense of we go up to him. And then he says it's a double portion. Well, that's the two loaves of bread are the double portion. And then what's interesting, he says, Isharon. So the double portion is followed by Isharon, which is a compound of Isher, which means ten, and tenfold. Ashar, which means to enrich, and own, to be empowered and to grow. So this offering of the two loaves of bread, which serves as an ascending wave offering, it's a double portion for a tenfold enrichment and empowerment. You see, it would be impossible for this to be a tithe, which is a tenth. You're talking about two loaves of bread, a double portion. A double portion, two loaves of bread, is not a tenth. And so to get tithe out of this, you have to really torture the statement. You know, two loaves of bread does not equate to a tenth. Shanaim, shanaim, which means two, double, double. A double, double will get you a really nice hamburger at In-N-Out. But a double, double isn't a tithe. It isn't tenfold. But what these loaves of bread represent, the covenant that has been formed with Yisrael and the bread of life that Yisrael would bequeath to us, the Masayah, Yahusha, that collectively the covenant and Yahusha provide us with a tenfold enrichment and empowerment. There's also another way of looking at the two loaves that is insightful as well, particularly in connection with the first four mikra, which is that they were collectively honored and fulfilled by the set-apart spirit and Yahusha. You know, on the first with Passover, all the way through Passover, Yahusha and the set-apart spirit are engaged as one. And then at the very last moment of Passover, so that the body can die, and since the Spirit of God cannot die, the Spirit of God separates from Yahusha's body and soul. But up to that point, Son and Spirit have suffered together. They have actually dined together as part of the Passover meal the previous evening, which was part of the same day, Passover. Now it's Yahusha's soul alone that would go to the place of separation from God on this most important Shabbat that we are counting 50 days from. But then on Bukurim, on first fruits, it's the reunification of Yahusha's soul and Yahweh's set-apart spirit that create the spiritual birth into the covenant family. They're together again. And on Shavuah, while Yahusha tells his disciples that he and the Spirit are one and the same, they're both manifestations of Yahweh, that it's the Spirit that enriches us and empowers us based upon the work that Yahusha and the Spirit have done on the three previous days, which is why these days are connected. So what is the double portion? It could well be that God is speaking of Yahusha and the set-apart Spirit, and that collectively they're providing the tenfold enrichment and empowerment. As we consider Yisharon and deciding what it means, the first thing we learn is that Yisharon shares an association with Eshar, which means 10. It also is a compound of Ashar, which means being enriched, and Own, which means to be empowered. And these specific gifts represent two of the five benefits of the covenant. The only two benefits of the covenant, which thus far have not been facilitated by the three Moed Mikre that came before Shavua. The first benefit of the covenant is that we become immortal, living forever with God as the gift of life from Pesach, Passover. Then we become perfect, where God says, walk to me and become perfect. The means to become perfect is to have the fungus of sin, which represents religious and political corruption, removed from us. And that occurs on matzah, which God calls a special Shabbat. And then this enables us, our souls, to be united with His set-apart spirit so that we become His children, immortal and perfect, adopted into His covenant family. But that's just the beginning of the process. The first thing that God wants to do is to empower us and enrich us with His promise that is based upon this formula of seven, of man plus God equals the ideal result, the promise, which is Shavua, where forevermore we are enriched and empowered by God. That is what Yisharon, a tenfold enrichment, Ashar, and empowerment Own, communicates to us. Especially telling, the very purpose of seven Sabbaths is to Yisharon, to enlighten and empower the children born on first fruits. And from this perspective, supplying food, shelter, and warmth is typical of the Yisharon, when Yisharon is even presented from the concept of a tithe, because it's focused on providing the very things which enrich a family and helping it grow. While most would not equate enrich with enlighten, I would, because Yahweh does. The moment He returns and affirms and renews, if you will, His covenant, the first thing He does is He writes a copy of His Torah inside of His children, thereby enriching the covenant children with His enlightenment, with His guidance. We're enriched when we're taught. We're enriched when we're properly guided. The single most valuable thing in the universe is the Torah. We inherit it. God gives it to us. It is this Torah that introduces us to God. It is this Torah that reveals how to form a relationship with Yahweh. It is this very same Torah that provides the means to our adoption into His family. It is this Torah that explains how we are enriched and empowered, becoming immortal and perfected. I'd say that the guidance and instructions which enable these things is easily the most valuable document in the universe. Therefore, the Torah is the most valuable, the most enlightening, the most enriching, the most empowering document ever written. Yah even calls His Torah light, the epitome of enlightenment, especially when one realizes that Torah means teaching. This passage is telling us that our willingness to answer Yahweh's invitation to meet with Him on this day and to act based upon His instructions, to bring the loaves of bread, which will nourish us and our guest, providing a tenfold increase in our enrichment and enlightenment and our empowerment, preparing us to enter and enjoy God's company. You'll also know that this grain offering was unlike that of the Mikra of Matzah, where sin, represented by the yeast fungus, was excluded. The time, or this time I should say, as we have mentioned, the flour was to be corrupted because the Feast of Seven Sabbaths is a come-as-you-all party, which is not designed to remove anything from us, including our sin. That's already been taken care of by matzah. That mission has been accomplished. Doesn't need to be done twice. It was done once and for all. Therefore, those who have already availed themselves of Passover's promise of eternal life and unleavened bread's promise of perfection and first fruit's promise of adoption into God's family, being spiritually reborn, are Yishuron, enriched, enlightened, and empowered tenfold by the set-apart spirit, so that our lives are richer, more rewarding, and our witness is more effective. Therefore, speaking of the lechem, the loaves of bread, this time, God says, and this is Korah 23:17, they shall exist as flour, as fine ground grains with hulls removed, baked with yeast, chemetz, soured, fermented, oppressed, grieved, cruel, ruthless, embittered, and puffed up by the leavening fungus. First fruits to approach Yahweh. Why the mention of first fruits? Because Shavuot is exactly the promise of seven sevens, of seven Sabbaths from first fruits. It follows first fruits. It is dependent upon first fruits. It is associated with first fruits. It is a continuation of first fruits. It's the promise of first fruits. It's the benefit of first fruits that we grow. We're empowered. We're enriched. We're enlightened. And of course, it's because it's the this very notion that matzah resolved the issue of our sin. The fact that we sin again after matzah is what God expects. If Yahweh provided the instructions, was he going to respond to that instruction or try to interpret it a different way, try to justify his ignorance of it? Was he going to try to argue with God and say, you know the content of my heart, what does it matter that you've asked me to do these things? Or did he say, this is the way that I can tell for certain if Abraham is really willing to listen to what I have to say and is genuinely going to respond to my instructions? And he did. And Abraham did. All along, he knew somehow the God he had come to know was going to resolve this. But he trusted and relied upon Yahweh. He responded to Yahweh's instructions, something that religious people don't want to do. And once Abraham showed a willingness to act upon God's instructions, God did the rest. He provided the sacrificial lamb himself. He did all the rest. And so Abraham, flawed as he was, flawed as he continued to be, is now immortal, perfect, righteous, enriched and empowered, a child of the covenant, as is Yishak, as is Jacob, as are so many of us today because of the same promise. It's all about listening to what God has to say, understanding what he's offering, and responding. Not to what we think we ought to do, but to what he is actually providing in terms of guidance. Capitalize. Does it matter that it was exactly 3 days walk to Moriah from where Abraham was at the time? That's an interesting detail. It ties in nicely with the 3 days of Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim. But does it matter? Could it have been a 4 day walk and the story still be equally valid? Absolutely. So should we get all in a twit over the fact it was a 3 day walk and not a 4 day walk or not a 2 day walk? That, you know, it's was it exactly 40 yobel, or can we make the case that it was precisely 40 yobel on this exact same spot that Yahusha would become the Passover lamb once again? Are we going to look at those details as the three? It's just another affirmation of God's plan. Another way of saying, yeah, I told you three. There's a reason I told you three. Is because three is important? No. But because of what three represents in concert with what I am communicating to you here. This is not just about Passover with Abraham as a dress rehearsal with his son on Mount Moriah and the slaying of his son's body on Mount Moriah. It's not just about Passover. It's about these 3 days, Passover, Matzah, Bukurim, which collectively are one, and the benefit of which is Shavuah, this day. God would go on to say, in addition to the loaves of bread, you should choose without reservation, to without hesitation, come near and approach with 7 1-year-old lamb sons entirely without defect or blemish. Why seven? Because this is Shavuah. It is about the promise associated with seven. It is about the Sabbath, which is God's promise to us, the day that he heals us. It is about seven, where God, who is one, plus man, who was conceived on the sixth day, equal God's desired result, which is we come together. It is about the Lamb, and that's the Passover Lamb, that makes us immortal. The fact that the Lamb itself has to be tamim, perfect, tells us that the purpose of Passover and these 3 days, unleavened bread and Bukurim, is to make us perfect. And it's, again, it is an invitation. And what do we do with invitations? We approach the party. We approach the festival. So in addition to the two loaves, you should choose without reservation, without hesitation, to come near and approach with 7 1-year-old lamb sons, entirely without blemish. So in addition to emphasizing the importance of the number itself, 7 perfect lambs represent the 7 mikra, the 7 steps in Yahweh's plan of reconciliation. It's the formula by which flawed souls come to have a relationship with God. It is the title Yah selected for this appointment. It is all about understanding God's affinity for 7 that opens the floodgates of understanding. That it is his promise to bring us together to celebrate our union and what it does to make both of us greater than we would otherwise be. I'm Yada. We'll return to Shattering This tomorrow.
A little over a year ago, I began to do a lot of research into why, even though I had a pretty good-sized meal, that I was still starving. And my research led me to a well-known fact that